There are too many windows. He hadn't followed me, just waited in the foyer until I finished my search. His eyes weren't glowing, which I took to be a good sign. There's a basement, I told him. I saw the windows outside. We found the stairs to the basement tucked neatly behind the stairway to the choir loft. He didn't seem to mind me being behind him, even with my stake, so I followed him down. Our footsteps, quiet as they were, sounded hollow in the stairwell. The air was dry and dusty. Andre opened the door at the bottom, and the scents in the air changed abruptly. Now I smelled Stefan, Adam, and Samuel, as well as Littleton, but the strongest scent of all of them was the demon. As it had at the hotel, after only a few breaths, the reek of demon drowned out everything else. The door at the bottom of the stairway had kept the scents contained. We walked even more quietly now, though, as Andre had said, if Littleton was here, he'd have heard us come in. The basement was darker than upstairs, and someone without preternatural sight might have had trouble seeing at all. We were in an entryway, similar to the foyer upstairs. There were a pair of bathrooms next to the stairway, and the men sign fell off when I pushed open the first door. Streetlights filtered through glass-block windows, allowing me to see that the room was empty, except for a broken urinal leaning crookedly against one wall. I let the door close. Andre had checked the other restroom and was already walking past a cloakroom and into a short hallway, the duplicate of the one upstairs, complete with doors. I left him to it and started on the other side of the stairs. The first room I walked into was a generous-sized kitchen, though there were only empty spaces where a refrigerator and stove had been. The cabinets were hanging open and bare. Along the inside wall there was a folding half-door covering the top of the counter. With it open, the church members could have served food from the kitchen to the room on the other side without walking back out to the foyer. Something scuttled behind me, and I spun around, but it was only a mouse. We stared at each other for a moment before it went on its way. My heart was beating like a drum in my ears. Stupid mouse. I came out to find Andre sitting in front of the double doors next to the kitchen. The door was chained shut and locked with a shiny new padlock. He put his hand on the door, and something beyond the door growled softly. A werewolf.
"He won't have left them free," Andre said, though he made no effort to break the chain. "That door would never hold a werewolf who wanted out." "Andre," Stefan called out, "is that you? Who's with you?"
"Stefan," Andre whispered, frozen in place. "Open the door." I pushed on his shoulder urgently. Stefan was alive. If I could have ripped the doors off the hinges myself, I would have. Stefan and at least one of the wolves were still alive. Andre took hold of the chain gingerly and pulled until one of the links broke. I reached past him and jerked on the chain, letting it fall to the floor as I pushed one of the heavy doors open. I slipped past Andre and found myself in a gymnasium the size of the sanctuary upstairs. The small windows on one side had been covered with black paper and tape with duct tape. But there was a torchiere lamp with a dim bulb hooked up to a car battery that provided enough light to see by. In the very center of the room, Stefan sat cross-legged inside a large dog crate, the kind you can buy at a pet store. About 10 feet away, there were more crates lined up next to each other. Something tight and angry eased as my eyes found a leggy red wolf, a muscular silver and black wolf, and a huge white wolf with crystalline eyes. Ben, Adam, and Samuel. Andre rushed past me and knelt in front of Stefan's cage. He touched the latch, and the dim bulb flickered. Magic sometimes has an odd effect on electricity. I heard a humming noise, and Andre jerked his hand back, shaking it briskly.
"The cages are spelled," said Stefan dryly. "Otherwise, don't you think my companions over there would have torn them to pieces?"
I noticed then that he was being very careful not to touch the bars on the side of the cage. He looked drawn and as pale as I'd ever seen him. His usual T-shirt was splattered with old blood, but other than that, he looked like himself.
"A lot of people think you're dead," said Andre.
"Ah," said Stefan, turning his brooding gaze toward me.
They are mistaken.
Stefan was alive and well, but I wasn't so certain about the rest. I took a step toward the wolves, and the red wolf in the nearest cage threw himself at me. The light blinked out entirely for a few moments, and when it came back on, Ben was crouched in the very middle of his cage, making hoarse grunting noises and staring at me with hunger in his eyes. Despite the ferocity of his lunge and the laws of physics, his cage hadn't moved. Magic. Ben hadn't wanted out. He'd wanted to eat me. Uncle Mike had been right. Demons had a bad effect on werewolves.
The demon's magic makes it quite impossible to escape these cages, said Stefan behind me.
His voice was mild, but somehow I knew he was angrier than I'd ever seen him. Sam, I said, approaching the white wolf. He was too big for the cage and had to bend oddly in order to avoid touching it. As I came closer, he began to shake. He whined at me, then snarled. In the farthest cage, Adam growled, but he was looking at Samuel, not at me. Adam, I asked, and he looked back at me. He was angry, all right. The scent of the werewolf's frustrated rage rose over the scent of demon, but his brown eyes were clear and cold. It was Adam in control. Samuel, I wasn't sure of. I reached out and touched Adam's cage. Nothing happened. No flash of power, no blinking lights. The magic didn't bother me, though the bars felt warm under my fingers. I set the stake down on the floor and tried Z's knife, but I couldn't get it to touch the bars. All it did was make the light go out again. The door was locked with a stout padlock, but there were linchpins in all the corners holding the cage together. I tried to pull one out, but I couldn't budge it. Adam whined. I reached my fingers through the bars and touched his soft fur.
When Littleton is here, Adam loses it too, warned Stefan. If I'd known the effect the demon would have on the werewolves, I'd have left them out of this. Warren and Daniel are dead.
Warren's not dead. He's badly hurt, but he's recovering at Adam's house, I said. And I knew about Daniel. Andre gave me a strange look, and I realized I hadn't told him that Daniel was dead.
I am glad to be wrong about Warren. I was expecting Andre sooner or later.
Stefan leaned toward me, and his voice took on a chiding note.
But Mercedes Thompson, what in the name of hell are you doing here?
Suddenly, as if they were all puppets on the same strings, the werewolves jerked their heads toward a door I hadn't noticed on the outside wall. Adam growled, and Samuel hit the side of his cage. Slowly, carefully, I pulled my fingers out of Adam's cage, but he paid me no attention. I picked up the stake again, but it seemed a flimsy weapon to use against a vampire. The door opened to the night outside, and a dark figure hesitated a moment, then strolled in. The door slammed shut behind him.
"Andre, how lovely to see you," crooned Littleton,
as his face came into the light. I saw that Z had been right. Sooner or later, all sorcerers stop being demon riders and become demon-ridden. Littleton was still in control because his prisoners were still alive, but he wouldn't be for much longer.
I'm sorry that you came while I was out getting a snack.
The t-shirt he wore had a dark stain on it. He stopped before he was halfway across the floor and smiled at Andre.
But I am here now, so all is well. Come here.
I'd let Andre convince me that he was right, that Marsilia had managed to give him enough power to handle Littleton. I was so certain of it that I thought he had some plan in mind when he walked around Stefan's cage. I took a better grip on the stake, hiding it from Littleton with my body as I dropped the backpack quietly to the floor, ready for Andre to do something. Andre was shorter than Littleton, so I could see Littleton's face even though Andre stood between us. I was still waiting for Andre to make his move when Littleton tipped Andre's head to the side and struck, while Andre just stood there. He didn't feed, just bit into the side of Andre's neck and then licked the blood. He laughed.
Thank you. How unexpected. Who'd have thought the selfish bitch would have shared her power with you? Did she think that would allow you to overcome us when we have the lovely and powerful Stefan to feed upon?
He kissed Andre's cheek and whispered,
He tastes better than you do.
He held Andre against him for a moment.
You know, if it were only me, I'd let you serve us. But my friend, the one who shares my head, the nameless one, he's been getting very bored. Yesterday we had the wolf and Daniel to entertain us. Today I thought to use the master of the wolves, but then you came to play.
Andre didn't fight, didn't pull away. He just stood there like Stefan had done while Littleton killed the maid. My fear caught Littleton's attention. He left Andre standing where he was and walked over to where I was crouched in front of Adam's cage.
The little girl Marsilia sent hunting me, he said. Yes, I knew about you. A master vampire can listen in on his children. Did you know? I am master now, and he, the child, I know all of his plans.
He could only be speaking of Andre. Littleton bent down too close to me. My hands were trembling, and I could smell the stink of my fear even above the smell of demon. I should have used the stake, but my own fear paralyzed me where I was.
Why did Marsilia think that you could hunt me down? What is a walker?
He asked. Quoting scripture doesn't work well on vampires, C had once told me, though it is sometimes effective on demons and the like.
For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, I said, so frightened that I could only whisper.
He cried out, covering his ears. I grabbed my sheep necklace and pulled it out of the neck of my shirt. I held it out, a blazing shield. When I said the next bit, my voice was stronger.
That whosoever believeth in...
Covering his ears must not have worked, because he dropped them and grabbed me by my shoulder with one hand and hit me with the other. I opened my eyes, and it felt as if no time had passed at all, except that I was lying on the floor about 15 feet behind Stefan's cage, my face pressed against the cool, dark linoleum tile. I tasted my own blood when I licked my lips, and my face was wet. Someone was fighting. I moved my head until I could see better. It was Andre and Ben. Ben's fur looked black as he danced in the shadows, looking for an opening against the vampire. He lunged forward, but Andre was faster, clipping him in the muzzle with his open hand. Ben slid away, mostly unhurt. I think if they'd been fighting on dirt or something that gave Ben's claws a proper grip, Ben would have had the upper hand. But in the dark, on the slick linoleum, it was almost even. Littleton stood with his back to the light, watching.
Wait, he said, sounding like nothing so much as a disappointed film director. Stop!
Ben snarled angrily and whirled to face his tormentor. Andre just stopped where he was, like a wind-up toy that had been suddenly turned off.
I can't get a good view from here, Littleton said. Come upstairs. You can play in the chapel while I watch from the loft.
He turned and strode off toward the doors that we'd left hanging open. He didn't turn to make sure that the others followed him, though they did. Andre walked a few feet behind the sorcerer, Ben's blood dripping from his fingertips. Ben was less obedient. He stopped to snarl at Adam and Samuel, who growled and snarled in return. Samuel hit his cage with a full-force blow that turned out the light for a count of three. When the light turned back on, Ben was standing in front of me.
Wolf! Said Littleton impatiently from outside the room.
Ben took one step closer to me and licked his lips.
Come, wolf.
There was power in that voice. I could feel it myself. Ben's lips lifted off his fangs, then he turned and ran out of the room. I heard the sound of his claws on the steps.
Mercy, can you come to me?
Asked Stefan in an urgent whisper. Good question. I tried to move, but there was something wrong with my shoulder joint. My left arm didn't move at all. I tried moving my legs and saw stars. Hastily, I dropped my head back to the floor and concentrated on breathing in and out. Cold sweat dampened my back. After a count of 20, I tried again. This time I think I actually did pass out, but not for more than an instant. "Nope," I said. "Not moving anytime soon. Something's wrong with my shoulder, and neither of my legs is very excited about moving either."
"I see," said Stefan after a moment. "Can you look at me, then?"
I tilted my chin and left my head on the floor where it wanted to stay. He was facing me, his eyes shimmering like a river of fire. "Yes," I said, and that was all the invitation he needed.
"Mercy," he said, and his voice filtered through the cells of my body, filling me with purpose. "Come to me."
It didn't matter that my arm didn't work or that I couldn't get to my feet. Stefan wanted me, and I needed to go to him. Someone was snarling, and the light was flickering crazily. Vaguely, I noticed that Adam was throwing himself against his cage over and over again. My breath came out in pained grunts as I pulled my uncooperative body over the cool floor, using the elbow of my good arm, because I still had the stake in my hand.
"Shut up, Wolf," Stefan's voice was soft. "Do you want him down here? I have a plan, but if he comes down here too soon, we'll all be dead, including Mercy."
When his voice stopped calling me, I rested, keeping my gaze on Stefan's. When he asked me to, I started moving again. It took a long time and it hurt a lot, but at last my cheek pressed against Stefan's cage.
"Good girl," he said. "Now put your fingers through the bars. No, you'll have to set the stake down for now. Good. Good. That's it. Rest now."
While Adam growled quietly, something sharp cut into my index finger. The pain was over too fast to worry about. Just one small pain among many. But when Stefan's mouth closed around it, I felt a sudden euphoria, and all the pain went away. Chapter 13. Cold and bitter, something dripped into my mouth. I would have spit it out, but it was too much effort. Gentle fingers, chill as ice, touched my cheek, and someone whispered words of love against my ears. A snarl wove its way into my world as the freezing liquid turned to fire and slipped down my throat into my stomach, forcing me back into awareness. The wild anger in that wolf's tone called an adrenaline rush of fear that brought me fully awake. I lay curled around Stefan's cage. The stake had rolled under me and lodged uncomfortably between my ribs and the floor. The light was off again, and I could smell burning flesh, even over the scent of demon. Part of me knew I shouldn't be able to see anything this clearly, but for some reason my night vision was even better than usual. I could see Adam staring over my head, his muzzle wrinkled and his eyes brilliant yellow lit with rage that promised death. I rolled my head a little so I could see what Adam was looking at. All I saw was Stefan. The vampire had threaded his fingers through the bars a few inches above my hand. He had a cut on his hand, a wide-open slash that was pouring blood. Some of it caught on the bars, but most of it slid down his fingers to drip on the floor. My neck and cheek were wet with it. I licked my lips and tasted something that might have been blood, or it might have been the finest elixir of some medieval alchemist. One moment it tasted like blood, iron and sweet, and the next it burned my tongue. Sparks glittered in the dark blood on the bars and sizzled on his skin where it touched the cage. His face was hidden against his upright knee.
"It's done now," he murmured.
I pulled back from the cage and then pushed awkwardly with my single good hand at his smoking limb, which was very cool to the touch, shoving Stefan back inside, away from the bars. Slowly he pulled his hand in toward his body and then raised his head, shutting his eyes when the dim light bulb, freed from the odd effect of the cage's sorcery, came back on.
"It'll only last for a little while," he told me. "You're still hurt, so be careful not to damage yourself more than you can help."
I started to ask him a question, but Samuel howled, and Adam, turning his attention away from Stefan and I, joined in the chorus. As their cries died away, I heard someone coming down the stairs. It sounded like Littleton was dragging something. I dropped back to the ground, my hair over my face to hide it, only then realizing that I felt better. A lot better. Amazingly better. One of the hallway doors was pushed open with a crash. Through the curtain of my hair, I watched Andre fly through the doorway and land in an ungraceful heap on the floor. Littleton liked to throw things.
"You didn't do it right," the sorcerer complained as he dragged a limp red werewolf through the doorway by one hind leg. "You have to do what I tell you. I didn't tell you to kill the wolf. It's not even midnight yet. You are not going to ruin my fun with an early kill."
He looked over at us, or rather, at Stefan. I closed my eyes most of the way, and hoped my hair hid them well enough that he didn't realize I was awake.
"I am sorry," he said contritely as he approached Stefan, still dragging Ben. "I haven't been much of a host. I didn't realize you were thirsty, or I'd have provided a meal. But then, I suppose I just did."
He dropped Ben in front of me, then nudged me with a toe.
"I might have played a little with this one," he said with a sigh. "But humans don't last as long anyway. Maybe I'll bring in a few more for food for you, though. It might be fun to turn them loose in here and make you call them to you."
Ben wasn't dead. I could see his ribs rising and falling. He wasn't healthy, either. There was a flap of torn skin on his hip that oozed blood, and one front leg bent oddly about 2 inches below the joint. I couldn't see his head, because the rest of his body was in the way. Littleton went back to get Andre. He picked him up and carried him like a lover as he brought him to the light in the center of the cages. With Andre still in his arms, he sat down next to the light. He arranged the other vampire on the ground like a doll, pulling Andre's head on his knee. Andre's face was covered with blood. I licked my lower lip and tried not to enjoy the buzz of vampire blood on my tongue. Littleton bit himself on the wrist, giving me a glimpse of his fangs, and then he put the open wound over Andre's mouth.
"You understand," he murmured to Andre. "Only you. You understand that death is more powerful than life, more powerful than sex. If you can control death, you control the universe."
It should have sounded melodramatic, but the fevered whisper lifted the hair on the back of my neck.
"Blood," he told the unconscious Andre, "blood is the symbol of life and death."
Andre moved at last, grabbing Littleton's wrist and holding it to him, curling around it, much as a starving Daniel had curled around Andre's wrist during Stefan's trial. I wished the lingering touch of Stefan's blood didn't taste so good. Andre opened his eyes and looked up. I expected his eyes to be glowing as Daniel's had been. Instead, they were intent. Like Adam's had been, his eyes were focused on Stefan. Littleton was muttering in Andre's hair, his eyes closed. So I took a chance and shifted my body just a little, drawing Andre's gaze. When he looked at me, I moved an inch more so he could see the stake. He closed his eyes again. Then, abruptly, let Littleton's arm fall away, and he rolled to his hands and knees, somehow managing to shift so that Littleton was between us, his back toward me.
"Blood is alive," said Andre in a voice I'd never heard him use.
It drifted through the room like a mist and settled on my skin.
"Blood is death." "Yes,"
Littleton sounded dazed. And I remembered how it had felt when Stefan fed from me. Until that moment, I'd almost forgotten he had fed from me. Littleton, unconcerned by my fears, said,
"Blood is the life and the death."
"Who commands death?" Andre asked, his voice calling for a response that my mouth wanted to form.
Littleton came up to his knees, and I could see the imprint of his spine on the back of his shirt.
"I do," he shrieked.
He reached over and grabbed Andre under the jaw and pulled the vampire where he wanted him. He bit down right over the top of the wounds he'd made in Andre's neck earlier. It was the best chance I was going to get. I tried to surge to my feet and almost fell. One of my ankles wouldn't hold any weight, though it didn't hurt. I didn't have far to go. Bent over Andre, Littleton's ribs were clearly outlined on his shirt. Someone should tell him that thin people shouldn't wear fabrics that cling. I picked a spot between the delicate, arching bones just to the left of his spine and struck with my whole body just as Sensei had taught me to hit. If my ankle had been working, I might have managed it. Training worked against me, and I instinctively tried to use my weight to help push the sharpened wood through. My leg collapsed under me, and the stake only went in an inch before it stuck between his ribs instead of breaking through them. Littleton jerked to his feet with an outraged cry. He struck out blindly, just missing me because I was already rolling away as fast as I could. Luckily, I was faster than the vampire. I rolled until I bumped against the car battery powering the light. "Bitch," Littleton hissed. I felt my neck, but my sheep necklace was gone, lost when he'd thrown me across the room. While I was fumbling, the sorcerer leapt at me. Andre grabbed him around the middle, and they both crashed to the ground just short of me. Littleton managed to put Andre on the bottom, and I saw that the stake was still embedded in his back. I grabbed the car battery by its plastic handle and hefted it in my right hand. Grunting with the effort, I raised it above the struggling vampires and brought it down on the end of the stake. The light, still attached to the battery, crashed to the floor, leaving the room in darkness once more. This time, I had trouble seeing clearly. The benefits of Stefan's blood were fading. I twisted until I could free Z's knife from its sheath. It took more effort than it should have. Littleton had gone limp, his body flopped over face up when Andre pushed him off. The stake had gone all the way through Littleton and protruded several inches through his chest. It had sliced into Andre just above his collarbone, but he didn't seem to mind. He lay flat on his back and laughed, though he didn't sound happy. The pain was back with interest, making me nauseous and lightheaded. I swallowed bile and sat up, using my good arm to push down and lever myself into a useful position. The knife in my hand clicked on the floor. I'd killed mice, rabbits, and once a deer while running as a coyote. I'd killed two men, three now. It didn't help me face the next task. Brian, my foster father, used to hunt, both as a wolf and with a gun. He and Evelyn, his wife, had butchered the meat while I wrapped it in freezer paper. I'd never had to cut up the carcass myself. Z's knife cut into Littleton's neck with a wet, slurping sound. I thought Littleton to be dead, deader than he'd been before, I mean. But as the knife slid in, his body began to spasm. The motion attracted Andre's attention, and he sat up.
What? No, wait!
His hand closed on mine hard enough to leave bruises, and he jerked my hand back. Littleton's head flopped to the side. The effect was somehow more grisly than if the head had been completely severed.
"Let go,"
I said, almost not recognizing the hoarse croak as my own voice. I jerked my hand, but he wouldn't release his grip.
"Marsilia needs him. She can control him."
Metal fell with a loud crash. The sorcerer's power was failing, allowing his prisoners to escape. Adam crouched beside me just a hair sooner than Samuel appeared on my other side. Both werewolves were snarling almost soundlessly, and I knew, almost without looking at them, that the human parts of them were gone, leaving only the predator behind. That the knowledge didn't frighten me to death is a measure of how traumatized I was. "Let go of me," I said again, this time softly so as not to alarm the werewolves who were quivering with eagerness at the smell of fresh blood. I wasn't really sure why they hadn't just attacked. Andre stared first at Adam, then at Samuel. I don't know that he was trying to control them, but if he was, it didn't work. Adam growled, and Samuel whined eagerly and took a half step closer. Andre released my wrist. I didn't wait any longer, pressing the knife through meat, gristle, and bone until Littleton's head rolled free and the knife cut into the linoleum. I'd been wrong. It was worse when the head was all the way severed. "Throw up later," I thought. "Destroy the body now."
The backpack wasn't more than a body length from me, but I couldn't find the energy to get to it.
"What do you need?" asked Stefan, who was crouched on the other side of the body next to Andre.
I hadn't noticed that he'd left his cage, too, or that he'd moved at all. He was just suddenly in front of me.
"The backpack," I said.
He got up like it hurt, and moved with none of his usual energy, returning with the backpack in hand. Both of the wolves stiffened when he held the pack out toward me over Littleton's body. Stefan was moving slowly because he was in bad shape, but it was probably a good thing. Making sudden moves around the werewolves would have been a bad idea, even if they had relaxed just a bit when I'd removed the sorcerer's head. As I reached out to take the pack, Andre spoke again.
"Marsilia needs him, Stefan. If she has a sorcerer at her beck and call, the others will have to cower in her presence."
"Marsilia can cow them on her own," Stefan responded tiredly. "A sorcerer is not a comfortable pet. Marsilia has allowed greed to overcome her common sense."
The medallion wasn't a very big item, and it hid from my fingers. It was heavy, though, so I finally managed to locate it in the bottom. I took it out and put it on Littleton's chest.
"What is that?" asked Stefan.
Rather than answering him, I leaned over Littleton's chest and whispered,
"Drachen."
"Burn, you bastard, burn." The metal disc started to glow cherry red. For a moment, I thought that was all it would do. But after a moment, the body burst into flame, the almost invisible blue flame of a Bunsen burner with the gas adjusted perfectly. I had a moment to wonder at the suddenness of it. Then Stefan leapt over the body, grabbed me under the arms, and pulled me back before I was caught up in the hungry flames. His grip reminded me I had an injured shoulder in the worst way. The sudden pain was so intense, I screamed.
"Shh," said Stefan, ignoring the werewolves who were eyeing him with hungry eyes. "It'll settle down in a minute."
He sat me down and put my head between my knees. His hands were still cold, like those of a corpse, which he was.
"Breathe," he said.
I couldn't help a hiccuping laugh at having a dead man tell me to breathe.
"Mercy?" he asked.
I was saved from trying to explain why I was laughing, because the outside doors were pulled open with a screech of bending metal. Stefan turned to face this new threat, a werewolf on either side. Andre stood up as well. All of them kept me from seeing the doorway, but I could smell them. Daryl and two others. The frightened child inside my heart, unappeased by Littleton's immolation, relaxed at last.
"You're late, Bran,"
I told him, as the light from the burning vampire flickered and died. It wasn't the Morak who answered me, but his second son, Charles.
"I told Daryl he shouldn't speed. If the police hadn't pulled us over, we'd have been here 10 minutes ago."
Bran walked by the vampires as if they didn't exist. He touched Samuel and then Adam.
"Charles has clothing for you," he told them, and they melted away into the darkness, presumably to change and get dressed.
Bran's presence did as much to allow them to regain enough control to change back to human as Littleton's death had. His permanent death, I mean. The dim light from outside backlit Bran, so it was difficult to see his face.
"You've been busy," he said, his tone neutral.
"No choice," I told him. "Did you read the papers I left for you?"
"Do you know that all the villains aren't ashes?"
"Yes," Bran said, and something inside of me relaxed. He couldn't know which of the vampires was Andre, but he'd manage, I knew. Uncaring of vampire dust or whatever else of Littleton might be scattered about on the floor, Bran knelt in front of me so he could bend down and kiss my forehead.
"It was a damned stupid thing to do," he said in a voice so soft as to be almost inaudible.
"I thought you couldn't make it here until morning," I said.
"I hurried."
He put his hand on my shoulder.
"Ouch,"
I said, sinking farther down on the floor.
"Samuel," he called, "if you could manage to hurry a bit. I think you have a patient."
My shoulder was only out of joint,
and Samuel put it back as gently as he could. It still hurt like the blazes. I shuddered and shook and managed not to throw up on anyone, while Adam, his voice harsh with barely controlled rage, told everyone what had happened after Andre and I showed up. Andre seemed stunned by Littleton's death. Stefan knelt beside him with a hand on his shoulder and a wary eye on all the wolves stalking around. I waited until I was sure I could talk without sounding too shaky, and until Adam was finished speaking. Then I looked at Stefan and said, "Andre is the one who made Littleton." Andre looked at me in shock, then threw his weight forward. I don't know if he'd have attacked me or just tried to run, but Stefan caught him. Before it turned into a real struggle, Charles and Daryl helped to hold him.
"I was going to ask if you were certain," Stefan said, releasing Andre to the werewolves, who were obviously in better shape to hold the other vampire. "But Andre has answered that question himself."
"I have proof," I told him.
"I would like to see it," Stefan said. "If only to present to the mistress. Right now, though, is there a cell phone I might use to call my seed? As much as I appreciate your help, Adam, I think that it would be a bad thing to bring your wolves into the seed right now, while tempers are still uncertain."
The vampires came and spirited Andre away. I had expected that Stefan would go with them, but he didn't. Samuel insisted on bringing me to the hospital, though Charles and Daryl took Ben, who was in worse shape than I was, to Adam's house in Daryl's car. "How come I can't just go home?" I whined. My shoulder ached, and I just wanted to go to my bedroom and pull my blankets over my head.
"Because you aren't a werewolf," Stefan said. "If your ankle is broken, you need a cast."
The werewolves who weren't driving, Adam and Samuel, gave him cold looks. Bran had brought Adam's SUV, and being stuffed inside it with the three werewolves and the vampire was a new experience in testosterone. When Samuel and Adam had gotten into the back seat with me, Stefan had slipped into the front. Bran was continuing to ignore the vampire, so Stefan stayed. The five of us staggered into the emergency room. The only one remotely respectable was Bran, and he was carrying me. It wasn't until we were under the intense lights of the hospital that I realized just how bad we looked. I was covered with blood. Stefan was covered in blood. His face was drawn and tired, though the expression on it was peaceful. I didn't want to know what I looked like. Samuel, even in clean, fresh clothing, looked as though he'd spent a week on a wild binge, and Adam, the nurse at the triage station, took one look at Adam and hit the innocent-looking black button underneath her desk. It wasn't the wear and tear that panicked her, but the look in his eyes. I know I was really glad that Bran was with us.
"It's all right, Elena," Samuel managed a rough growl that only barely sounded human. "I'll take them in."
She looked at him again, and shock spread over her face.
"Dr. Cornick?"
She hadn't recognized him when we'd come in. "Call the Kennewick police," I told her. "Ask for Tony Montenegro. Tell him Mercy has some news for him, if he can get his butt down here." Samuel would be questioned by the hospital administrators, I thought. I didn't know if he'd missed a shift or not, but they wouldn't overlook him coming in with this crew. Police business would cover his rump, and I thought that Tony might benefit from seeing that the werewolves had taken his concerns seriously. It would also let the wolves know they had allies among the police here. People who could be trusted. That was important if they were ever to integrate into the citizenry. There were a few people in the waiting room, and all of them stopped whatever they were doing to look at Adam. The smell of fear overpowered the scent of illness and blood. Even Bran stiffened a little under the flood of triggered scents. Samuel strolled right through the room, ignoring the woman who bravely came up to us to get insurance information. Bran paused before he followed Samuel through a pair of swinging doors.
"Not to worry, my dear," he told the woman gently. "Dr. Cornick will see to it that all the proper forms are filled out."
Tony walked into the emergency room as if he'd been there a time or two before. He was wearing civilian clothes, jeans and t-shirt, but the cheery-faced young man with him was in uniform. He strolled into my curtained cubicle and looked around.
Samuel was off doing doctor stuff, but the others were all there. Stefan and I had scrubbed up. I was in one of those stupid hospital gowns, but Stefan's clothes were still covered with blood. Bran sat on the doctor's chair, slowly spinning it around, looking like a bored teenager. Like the people in the waiting room, Tony and his companion ignored Bran and watched Adam, who was leaning against a wall. Stefan was slumped in a corner and got a swift assessing glance before the police both looked back at Adam.
Tony, this is Adam Hauptmann. We were talking about him just the other day. Adam, this is my friend Tony.
I didn't bother to introduce the others.
Tony's face froze, and he stopped where he was. I guess he hadn't recognized Adam from his newspaper pictures until I'd used his name.
Adam's publicity shot showed a conservative businessman. There was nothing conservative or businesslike about him tonight. Anger radiated off of him in waves even humans should be able to sense.
"Hey, John," Tony said casually after quickly looking away from the Alpha.
I guess the information sheet that had gone out on werewolves had explained that it was not a good idea to have a staring contest with one.
"Why don't you get both of us a cup of coffee?"
The other cop gave Tony a narrow-eyed look, but he only asked,
"How long should I take?"
Tony glanced at me. I shrugged and instantly regretted it.
"This won't take more than 10 minutes.
When the other cop had gone, Tony pulled the curtains closed. It didn't give us much privacy, but the cacophonous chatter of dozens of mysterious machines would mask whatever we had to say from human ears.
"You look like death warmed over," he told me.
"It wasn't at the police station," I told him, too tired for our usual teasing. "But it wasn't more than a half mile away."
"You found it."
"I killed it," I said. "I think that you'll find the nightlife will calm down a little from here on out." Tony frowned.
"It?" "Yes."
Stefan's voice was weary.
"Something that should never have been allowed to roam the streets. It was not murder, sir. It was a self-defense."
"Don't worry," offered Bran meekly. "There isn't a body." Only because he'd noticed Littleton's head lying around, and we'd used Z's medallion to get rid of it, too. I'd forgotten all about it. Presumably it wouldn't have done anything except scare the bejeebers out of whoever found it, since the body was gone, but I was just as glad to have that last bit taken care of as well. Tony looked at Bran more closely.
"Do I want to ask who you all are?"
"No," I told him.
"So why did you call me in?" Tony asked.
I opened my mouth to answer, and Samuel pulled the curtains aside and stepped in, an X-ray in his hands.
"Dr. Kornick,"
Tony greeted him like an old friend. I suppose that cops might see a lot of emergency room doctors. Then something about the wariness of everyone in the room clued him in. "Samuel needs to have the shield of police business to hide behind," I said before he could ask if Samuel was a werewolf too. Tony frowned, taking a careful look at the people in the room, avoiding eye contact.
"All right," he said slowly. "You're sure everything will get back to normal?"
I started to shrug, but nodded my head instead.
"As normal as it gets."
"Fine."
He looked at Samuel.
"Tell me that you're not a danger to your patients."
I waited anxiously for a smart-ass comment, but Samuel was tired too. He only said,
"I'm not a danger to my patients."
"All right," Tony said. "All right. Dr. Kornick, if anyone asks about this, just tell him it was a police matter you were helping in."
He took out his wallet and pulled out a card.
"Give him my number if you need to."
Samuel took the card.
"Thank you."
Then Tony turned back to Adam.
"Mr. Hauptmann," he said, "Mercy tells me that I ought to speak with you first on matters concerning werewolves."
Adam rubbed his face tiredly. It took him so long to speak that I worried. Finally, he said in an almost civil tone,
"Yes. Did Mercy give you my number?"
"We didn't get that far."
Adam collected himself and managed a small smile that made him look like a hungry tiger. Tony took a discreet step back.
"I'm not carrying my cards tonight, but if you call my office, I'll instruct them to give you my cell phone number. Or Mercy usually knows how to get in touch with me."
My ankle was just sprained.
Stefan left while Tony was talking with Adam. No one but me seemed to notice. I don't know if he did some vampire thing, or that no one else cared. Adam wanted me to stay at his house, but he had half the local pack, part of the Montana pack, and Kyle staying at his house. I had no intention of joining the crowd. After the others left for Adam's house, Samuel carried me into my battered trailer and started toward my bedroom, but I didn't want to sleep. Not ever. "Can you take me to the office instead?" I asked. He still wasn't speaking much, but he obediently switched directions and took me into the tiny third bedroom that hummed with various bits of electronics. He set me in the chair, then dropped to his knees in front of me. His hands were shaking when he closed them on my knees and pulled them apart so he could fill up the space between. His body was hot as he pressed himself against me and buried his face in my neck.
"I knew you'd come," he whispered,
and the power of his wolf ruffled my hair as it rushed over me.
"I was so worried. And then the wolf came. Adam kept control. He tried to help me, but I was in a worse state than Ben, who had been there far longer. I am losing control of my wolf. I'm a danger to you. I told my father that as soon as you are well, I will return to Montana."
I held him with my good arm. Demons aren't good for a werewolf's control.
"Of the three of us there," he told my neck, "I had the least control."
That wasn't true. I'd been there and seen him still fighting when Ben had given up entirely to the wolf. But before I took up that argument, I realized something. "The church is less than half a mile from the hospital," I told him. "Uncle Mike told me the demon's presence causes violence anywhere near him, and the police records confirm that. When Tony worked it up for me, we found that the area of effect was over 3 miles in diameter. You've been fighting the demon since the night I first ran into Littleton. It had been for a few days. You, it's been working on for weeks." He stilled, thinking about it. "The night you lost control after that accident with the baby," I said, "it wasn't you. It was the demon." The arms of my chair creaked a protest under his hands. He took a deep breath of my scent and then pulled back a little so he could look me in the face. Very slowly, giving me plenty of time to pull away, he kissed me. I thought I might love Adam. Samuel had hurt me once before, very badly. I knew that he might only want me now for the same reason he had wanted me then. Even so, I couldn't pull away. I had come so close to losing him. I returned his kiss with interest, leaning into his body and threading my fingers through his fine hair. It was Samuel who ended the kiss.
"I'll get you some cocoa," he said, leaving me in my chair.
"Sam," I said. He stopped at the door, his back to me and his head lowered.
"I'll be all right, Mercy. For tonight, just let me get us both some cocoa."
"Don't forget the marshmallows," I told him. Chapter 14. "He's not come to trial yet?"
"No."
Stefan sipped at his tea, which he had requested. I hadn't known vampires could drink tea.
"How's the ankle?"
I made a rude noise. "My ankle is fine," which wasn't strictly true, but I wasn't going to let him change the subject. "It took them only a day to bring you to trial, and it's been 2 weeks for Andre."
"Weeks that Andre spends in the cells beneath the seethe," Stefan said mildly. "He's not out vacationing. As for how long it is taking, I am afraid that is my fault. I've been in Chicago to see what I can ferret out about Andre's activities there, to make sure that Littleton was the only person he managed to turn."
"I thought Andre didn't have enough control to turn his people into vampires." Stefan set his tea on the table and gave me an interested look.
"Rachel said you'd been over to visit. I hadn't realized how much you learned."
I rolled my eyes at him. "I grew up with werewolves, Stefan. Intimidation isn't going to work. Tell me how Andre managed to turn a sorcerer when he can't turn one of his minions." His face lit up in one of his generous smiles.
"I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know. Corey Littleton has been flirting with evil since he was a very young boy. His apartment in Chicago, which Andre has paid for up until next December,
had a secret room I sniffed out. It was full of interesting things like black wax candles and books on ancient ceremonies that would have been best left uncatalogued. I burned them and the notebooks he kept his journals in, written in mirror writing of all things. At least it wasn't in Greek.
Does Andre know how Littleton became a sorcerer? Could he make more of them?
Asked Samuel, his sleep-roughened voice emerging from the hallway.
Hello, Samuel, Stefan said.
Medea came out of the hallway shadows first, meowing sharp little complaints as she trotted across the kitchen floor and hopped onto Stefan's lap. Samuel followed, half-dressed and sporting a day's growth of beard. Samuel hadn't been himself since Littleton captured him. Or maybe since that night he told me about the baby his girlfriend had aborted. His temper was shorter, and he was too serious. When I tried to bring up the subject of that kiss we'd shared, he wouldn't discuss it. I worried about him.
Does Andre know how to create a sorcerer?
Stefan nodded his head slowly.
According to Littleton's journals, he does. Littleton told him.
Samuel pulled out a chair and spun it around so he sat on it backwards.
Was it something about Littleton being a sorcerer that allowed him to survive being turned?
Medea batted Stefan's hand, and instead of picking up his cup, he rubbed her behind her ears. She purred and settled more firmly on his lap.
I don't know, Stefan answered finally. I'm not certain even Andre knows. He fed off Littleton for several years before turning him. I don't think that he has any more Littletons waiting in the wings, though. It's not all that easy to find someone willing to sell his soul to the devil.
Samuel relaxed. He was a sorcerer before he was a vampire? I asked.
Yes.
Stefan wiggled his fingers in front of Medea's nose, and she batted at them.
He was a sorcerer before he met Andre. He thought that being a vampire would make him more powerful. Andre told him so. Neither he nor the demon was pleased to find out that being a vampire meant that they had to follow Andre's orders.
He wasn't following Andre's orders that night in the church.
Samuel reached over and grabbed a cup and filled it from the teapot on the table.
No, it is possible to break the bond of control the Maker has over his children. Just difficult.
Stefan sipped his tea, and I wondered what his careful expression was hiding. Speaking of bonds, I said, finally asking the question that had haunted me since the night I'd killed Littleton, will there be any permanent effects from your sharing blood with me that night? I wanted him to say no. Instead, he shrugged.
Probably not. One blood exchange isn't much of a connection, and the effects from it will fade. Have you noticed anything odd?
I shook my head. No telekinesis tricks for me.
Why were you able to call her to you? Asked Samuel. I thought she was immune to vampire tricks.
Mostly immune, murmured Stefan. But you don't have to worry about that. Calling is one of my talents. If Mercy hadn't been mostly unconscious and willing to come, I couldn't have called her. She's not going to suddenly find herself unable to resist coming to my call or the call of any other vampire.
I didn't ask him about the memory I had of him murmuring loving words into my ears. I hoped it was just something to do with how he'd called me. Why did you come here tonight? I asked instead. Stefan smiled at me with such power, I wasn't sure he was truthful when he said,
I had to strengthen my stomach. Visits with you are always bracing, Mercedes, if not completely comfortable.
He glanced down at his watch.
But it's time for me to go, while you still are able to get a full night's sleep. The mistress will expect a full report.
He put the cat down with a final pat and got up to leave. In the open doorway he hesitated, and without looking at me he said,
Don't fret, Mercy. I've learned all I can. And she won't hold back the trial again. Andre will face justice.
I waited until Stefan had left before I asked Samuel, They have that chair, the one that makes you tell the truth. Why did he go out to investigate? Samuel gave me a dark look.
Sometimes I forget how young you are, he said.
I glowered right back at him. Don't think that ticking me off will get you out of answering. Why did he delay the trial? Samuel took a sip of tea, grimaced, and set it down. He wasn't a tea drinker.
I think he's worried about what questions will get asked and what questions will not. If he knows enough, he can testify himself.
It sounded fine, but I couldn't see why he'd tried not to tell me that. There must be something more. He looked at my face and laughed wearily.
Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Go to bed, Mercy. I need to get ready to go to work.
Dad told me to ask you when you're going to fix that eyesore the sorcerer made at your house, Jessie said, levering herself onto a shelf in my shop.
When I win the lottery, I told her dryly, and went back to tightening the belt on the old BMW I was working on. Jessie laughed.
He told me you'd say that.
My shoulder was still pretty sore, and I limped, but at least I could work now. Z had taken over the shop for 2 weeks. He didn't want me to pay him. But he'd saved my life with his vampire kit. I owed him enough. If I was lucky, after paying him, I'd still be able to cover the bills, but not much else. It would be a few months before I could afford to even look at replacing the siding on the trailer. "What are you doing here, anyway?" I asked.
"I'm waiting for Gabriel to get off work."
I looked up at that. She laughed harder.
"If you could see your face, who are you worried about, him or me?"
"When you break his heart, it'll be me who'll have to live with the moaning." If there was real fear in my voice, it was only because Z's son Tad, Gabriel's predecessor, had had a very rocky love life.
"When she breaks my heart, if anyone's heart breaks, it'll be hers," Gabriel informed me grandly from the office doorway. "Unable to resist my charm, she'll be devastated at my callousness when I tell her I must go to college. The loss will cause her to resign herself to a long and lonely life without me."
Jessie giggled.
"If my dad stops in, tell him I'll be home around 10.
I gave Gabriel a stern look. "You know who her father is." He laughed.
"A man who will risk nothing for love is not a man."
Then he winked.
"I'll have her home before 10, though, just in case."
Alone, I buttoned up the BMW and closed down the shop. Stefan hadn't called me this morning before I came to work, so I didn't know if anything had happened with Andre. There was nothing to worry about. Andre was clearly guilty of creating a monster. Still, there had been a weariness in Stefan's manner last night that made me fret a little. If it was an open and shut case, why had he spent weeks in Chicago investigating? I had company waiting for me in the parking lot. Warren had lost some weight and still limped, even worse than I did. It hadn't stopped him from wiping the floor with Paul, who now cringed whenever Warren walked by. And if there were occasional nightmares, he still looked much happier than he had been. Much of that was due to the handsome man leaning on the fender of Warren's battered truck, wearing, of all things, a lavender cowboy outfit complete with purple hat. The only good thing that had come out of the Littleton business was that Warren and Kyle were an item again. "Who ticked you off?" I asked Kyle, who had exquisite taste.
"I was meeting a client's husband and his high-powered Seattle lawyer. The longer they think I'm a lightweight poof, the higher I'll hang them in court."
I laughed and kissed him on the cheek.
"It's good to see you." "We're going to catch a show at my place," Kyle said. "We thought you might like to join in."
"Only if you change clothes," I told him seriously. The truck rocked a little, and Ben stuck his head over the side of the bed where he'd been resting. His red coat was rough, and his eyes were dull. He let me touch his face before curling back up in the truck bed. When I got in the cab, Warren said,
"Adam thought it would do Ben some good to get out. We thought it would do you some good, too."
"He's still not shifting?" I asked.
"No, and he wouldn't hunt with us at full moon."
I glanced out the back window. But although he doubtless could hear us talk about him, Ben didn't raise his head off his front paws.
"Is he eating?"
"Enough."
Which meant that he wasn't likely to lose control and eat me like he'd eaten Daniel. That's what Daniel had been telling me. Vampires, not even vampires possessed by demons, don't eat other vampires. It surprised me a little that Ben was taking it so hard.
He had always seemed to me like the kind of person who could strangle his granny for her pearls, then eat a peanut butter sandwich in her kitchen afterwards. Maybe I was wrong, or else eating someone was tougher. Warren had told me that Ben and Daniel had struck up an odd friendship while they were out hunting Littleton. It hadn't been strong enough to save Daniel, but it might be enough to destroy